B-Pod Studios.
Sports Hub. Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
Equal.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Agenda Free Friday continues here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. Catch us anytime on the app, 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Agenda Free Friday is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Everything on the table from the week, anything we have gotten to or have yet to get to, it's all up to you and your wonderful phone calls. We'll talk to Chris in a minute, but we go back to your phones as promised. Sean is in Marlborough on the Patriots. Hi, Sean.
Hey, normally I'm Chris, but give me a minute here. Mike, you've been saying for like 5 years that the Pats need to load up to maximize the Brady window. So what do? They trade picks. They bring in players. They spend to the cap. They win two out of three, almost three out of three Super Bowls. And now you're salty over the fact that they're in cap jail, but they just won two Super Bowls.
I was never the load up guy. Did I ever say that?
No, I didn't.
In fact, I've been saying for years, get the next quarterback. Use a first round pick. I'm not the load up guy. Murray's the load up guy.
Yeah. Hi.
when it comes to salaries, though, everyone's like, oh, the big name, the big time. It seems like the salaries are exponential, and you can get 80% of the talent for 50% of the cost. So it's harder.
I don't believe that, Sean. I believe Bill Belichick can coach up a C-minus player into a B-minus player where no one else can really do it as consistently as he can do it. But I don't think that you get 80% of the talent for 50 cents on the dollar. I think the talent's the talent. Bill just gets more out of it.
But if you use it the right way, you're not paying for talent. If you can coach up, you don't need to pay for an Aaron Donald or a Julio Jones.
I didn't tell him to go after Aaron Donald.
Sean, how do you feel about the receiving core?
Actually, you want to hear that? Only one team in the last 20 years has won a Super Bowl with a multi-year all-pro wide receiver or running back. So I really don't care about wide receivers and running backs.
Well, I'm with you in terms of the superstar guy. I'm 100% with you on running backs, and I'm 100% with you on those big, flashy, you know, diva receivers. I want nothing to do with them. I do want some mid-tier guys. They don't even have mid-tier guys, Sean.
Could they use more talent? Yeah, and I have a feeling they're going to get some, you know, a tight end and a wide receiver in the draft, and they'll probably bring back like a Hogan or like a Hogan type. Like, you never heard of Chris Hogan when he was with the Bills.
And yeah, we did.
Him, and he's useful.
Sean, Chris Hogan looks like Jerry Rice compared to the current crew that they have here.
Yeah, and Sean, look, again, it's a nice stat you had, but you didn't answer the question. How do you feel about the receiving core?
And while I've been load up guy to maximize the Brady window here, like, I don't necessarily need Odell Beckham Jr. or A.J. Green on the wide receiver core, even though I'm yelling about trade for him yesterday. I just need something better. Like, you know, get Julian Edelman some help. Philip Dorsett is also good. You need someone else on the outside that can win one-on-ones against a cornerback. You don't have that. They need another two.
I just think it's fascinating that they're treating, presumably, this is the way it looks today on March 15th, that they're treating Brady like Peyton Manning at the end or John Elway at the end. Or like they have Joe Flacco.
Which he is not.
Which, you know, we're going to run the ball and play defense to protect our quarterback. Which he's not. He's got too much game left for that.
See, this is why I can't stand when we get into these sorts of discussions. Because Patriots fans get all annoyed that you're not allowed to talk about how they've composed the roster. You're not allowed to. We're not allowed to do that because what? Because they won? Because they win, we're not allowed to talk about anything.
No, that's not true.
Is that the deal? Is that the deal with Patriots fans? We're not allowed to look at anything.
We're not
allowed to look at the receiving core and say Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, for crying out loud, in the receiving core. Who other than Edelman, who do you trust there? We're not allowed to ask that question?
We are. And we will. And we have been. Mike in North Carolina. Hi, Mike.
Big baby.
Matt, take a deep breath. So the bottom line is that there's panic mode at Gillette Place. Steve's calling all the shots. Believe Belichick is MIA for the last 2 weeks. His phone's cut off. Real quick, Cordell Patterson, letting him walk was a mistake. If I hear Mavs say frickin' frack is better than Patterson, I will cut radio off. The last point, we need a quarterback, and I'm trying to figure out, was there an issue why we didn't go ahead and try to make a push for Bridgewater?
So he wanted to stay. So, yeah, he stayed for $7 million. So you're not... But $3 million for Brian Hoyer is ridiculous enough. I'm not in there. You know, I'm all for the future, but I don't know if I want to spend $7 million on a backup quarterback unless it's for 1 year Garoppolo and he's clearly the next guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not doing that for Teddy Bridgewater. So I don't think you ever had a shot. I've never even heard you link to him in any way, shape, or form. Maybe there was no real interest there. I'm curious about Bortles because there was a time, and it was reported during the draft, that Bortles was ahead of Garoppolo on their depth chart there in the draft, on their board, and they would have taken Bortles if he dropped. Or Rosen. Like, those are guys that I'm sort of looking at for them.
I mean, how could you possibly give $7 million to Bridgewater when you're giving $3 to Nate Ebner and how much to Brandon King?
One something.
No, I mean, you got to have those special teams guys. Pay him $3 million a whack. Nate Ebner, three balloons. You've got to be kidding me.
Brandon King is one, call it 1-4.
That's 4.5 for Ebner and King. 4.5. And this guy, Terrence Brooks, he's another special teamer. So him and give me one more. Brandon Bolden. There you go. Four special teamers. $7 million. How could you possibly pay Teddy Bridgewater when you were given seven balloons to your kick coverage team? That sucks, by the way. Or at least it did this past year.
It's Agenda Free Friday, so everything's on the board. Here's a topic near and dear to our hearts. Here's Nick in Nashville. Hi, Nick.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. So I just wanted to talk about your favorite heavyweight and mine, Deontay Wilder. You know, he's anointed by God. He's the next biggest thing in heavyweight boxing. He's going to bring back, you know, heavyweight boxing, and I love it. And I'll always root for him. He's a great story. But if you guys have looked over at the Brit, Anthony Joshua, he is a force. And I'm not just talking about the fight with Klitschko. If you go back and watch him against Dillian White.
Hey, Nick.
I mean,
Nick,
yes.
Let me stop you. I've watched them both. Joshua is a much more polished fighter. Joshua should be a heavy favorite when he faces Wilder.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone disputes that.
No, but we're rooting for Wilder.
And I want to see the fight.
And Wilder's got a puncher's chance because he throws howitzers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm rooting for Wilder all the way myself. But I think that, like you said, he's Anthony Joshua is a way more polished fighter. He's way more technical. And if Wilder is so anointed by God, can he anoint him a little bit of defense and counterpunching? Because he has heavy hands, but he's very erratic. He's kind of like Mike Tyson without the polish.
Oh, no. And, well, Nick, know? He's so wide open. I mean, I think Wilder is due to get knocked over the ropes.
Yeah, he's going to get killed one of these fights.
You can't see it on the radio, but he's like, I feel like he punches from the outside, and he's so wide open. He leaves himself so if anyone can reach him, I mean, the guy's giant, 6-something. So you got to be able to get in there and reach him.
6'7".
But if you can get up there, and Joshua's massive himself.
6'6".
So maybe Joshua can do it. But he's not very technical. He's not very conservative. And I think you could get inside of him and knock him into next week, but no one's really done it yet.
I mean, the last two guys that Wilder has fought, or two of the last three, I don't know if he fought anyone in between, Fury and that Ortiz guy.
Ortiz is a tomato.
Okay, Ortiz knocked him down twice. Like, you know, he can get hit. He's not a skilled boxer.
Right.
So he is wide open all over the place. I mean, it's just one haymaker after the next.
But this is what makes him fun. This is why I like it. As opposed to these little guys that I have to watch point each other. I have no interest in that. I really don't. I didn't have any interest. I stopped having interest in that after Sugar Ray Leonard and, you know, Hearns and Hagler in that era of middleweights and welterweights. I have no interest in it nowadays. None. All the little fighters you've told me to go see, I haven't liked a single one of them. The only fight I liked was Conor McGregor because it was a fun kind of bleep show. Other than that, give me these heavyweights. So we're still rooting on Wilder. We've been in touch with Wilder's camp. We're going to try and talk to him when he announces the next fight.
Which is coming up soon, allegedly.
Fury went and signed this deal in the U.S. with, was it ESPN?
ESPN he signed with.
So they can't have a rematch now.
Correct.
Which is unbelievable.
Right. And then Wilder, Billy knows all the details about this, so I don't know if he wants to get on the mic. Wilder was close to signing a deal with this streaming service out there that's called DAZN.
DAZN.
DAZN. Yeah. Okay. So, but apparently Wilder turned it down, and it would have been a two-fight minimum. And that he would have been on this streaming site. And also, Joshua, I think, is on the same program.
I mean, look, long story short, boxing still can't get out of its own way. I mean, it's just because he's a really entertaining fighter. I'm not telling you he's a great fighter, but he's entertaining. They're undefeated. They're heavyweights. They hit hard. They go down. And they should be promoting these guys and having them fight each other, and it should be a thing. And they're really missing the boat that it's not. Jake and Norton on the Russell Westbrook situation. Hi, Jake.
Yeah, I kind of have a different take on it. I don't really agree with the public consensus on what was said. I kind of agree with the Kiesel guy on what he said, referring to, like, how Westbrook had those heat wraps on his knees, and he must have said something about, like, yeah, ice up your knees or whatever, like, you're going to need those.
Hey, Jake, he said get down on your knees. And Westbrook wasn't down on his knees. He just had heat wraps on his knees.
Yeah, is that like a definite quote? Because the Kiesel guy said that he made a reference to the ice, like icing his knees, and Westbrook responded saying that it was heat, you idiot, or something.
Right, Jake, yes.
I'm not saying that Westbrook was lying necessarily. I just think that maybe he heard what he wanted to hear and that maybe they're both kind of...
Jake, they investigated. They went back and found video and audio and heard exactly what he said, Jake.
Thank you.
It's not his word versus anyone else's. They went and found audio and video and clips and got him saying what was said. And I think he said more, and I don't know what else was said, but they did their own internal investigation with camera phones and stadium cameras, et cetera, et cetera.
And people who were sitting there.
Okay, and they talked to people around him. And to the point where they've actually found other guys sitting in that same area chirping other things that they've also thrown out of the stadium. So try again. Try again.
So I know what the guy's excuse was when they interviewed
exactly.
him.
Exactly. That's what he said.
Okay. But that's what it was. Right. But that's what it was. It was an excuse. Because I heard it, and then instinctively I said, this guy's lying. Now he's covering his ass. And that's how I felt right away.
So, again, that's not a he said, she said thing. They went and looked at that. Alan in California, quickly. Alan!
Yeah, so as of a few weeks ago, there was an article that you guys had in Sports Hub about all the Patriots draft picks. It looks like they got four in the first few rounds, some of their own drafts that they got from trades, and all in the commensurate draft. So what's going on with that? What's the upside?
Okay, well, the upside is, I don't know. It feels like the positions that are deep, isn't it? Defensive end and
safety.
They got to start drafting offense, man. They have no passing game players.
Again, really, you look at it. No, they have no long-term plan at QB. They have no long-term plan at tight end and no long-term plan at receiver.
Seriously.
Go right down. Now, the offensive line overall, you'd say, is in pretty good shape.
Absolutely in good shape.
So you don't have a ton of concern there.
And so is the running back situation.
And so this one's really going up my mail slot. And it has now for a little while, this idea the Patriots have all these picks, okay, which they do. They have six in the first three rounds. But it is a manipulation of the facts because one of them is 98, which is at the end of the third. And the other one is 102, which is also at the end of the third. In fact, it's the second to last pick of the third. So they're making it sound like they got, you know, that they have six picks in the first 75. When the reality is that only three of them, you know, and they only have one, I think, in the first 50, for crying out loud. So I look at it and say, who would you rather be? The Raiders have four of the first 35 picks. Four of the first 35, but that's all they have. Or would you rather have the Patriots six in the first three rounds? I'll take Oakland's four any day of the week.
Gasper on the Patriots situation so far in free agency. Coming your way next.
Felger?
Yeah.
Say it. Felger?
Felger.
Maz.
Maz.
Murray.
Murray. Felger, Maz, Murray.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Sports Hub.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Agenda Free Friday continues here on 98.5, the Sports Hub, simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. Catch us anytime on the app. 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Agenda Free Friday is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Everything on the table from the week, anything we've gotten to or have yet to get to, it's all up to you and your wonderful phone calls. We'll talk to Chris in a minute, but we go back to your phones as promised. Sean is in Marlboro on the Patriots. Hi, Sean.
Hey, normally I'm Chris, but give me a minute here. Mike, you've been saying for like 5 years that the Pats need to load up to maximize the Brady window. So what do? They trade picks. They bring in players. They spend to the cap. They win two out of three, almost three out of three Super Bowls. And now you're salty over the fact that they're in cap jail, but they just won two Super Bowls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think Gronk's going to take a break for a while. I don't think he's going to...
Like a whole while?
I don't think he's initially going to start off and come back. I think he's going to figure it out. And I think later on, and this is just my own assessment, later on deep in the season, he could possibly come back and play.
I want to make sure I'm clear with what you're saying. You're saying that you don't expect Rob Gronkowski to go to camp?
No, I don't think he's going to play. I think he's going to start off the season by being retired. And I think he's going to get the itch. I think he's going to be in great shape. And he's going to probably have that feeling that, hey, I want to come back.
That was William McGinnis earlier this week on NFL Network. I consider that kind of a whopper. That was kind of detailed from someone in the circle. Not just the Patriots circle, but the Alex Guerrero circle. Willie's really tight with Alex Guerrero. Willie was the one that introduced Alex Guerrero to Tom Brady. So, you know, Gronkowski's a big Alex Guerrero guy, so he's in that circle, not just the Patriots circle. So when Willie says something like that, that got all of our attention. A big storyline here in the Patriots offseason, which is now in day two or three and has been pretty underwhelming, I think, is the consensus opinion. Christopher Gasper of the Boston Globe joins us in our Town for Tire studios. Hi, Chris.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing, babe? So your thought on the Patriots so far as it relates to Gronkowski and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say overall, when I look at their team, I felt like a lot of times with a championship team, right, you feel like, okay, this is a championship team. If we just sort of keep it together and tinker around the margins, we're good. That's not how I felt. You know, I think they sort of got away with one last year, and I thought going into it, they really needed to upgrade the team, and that hasn't happened so far. It's early, and there's so many different components to this in terms of what they end up doing with the draft picks. You could get a guy like Sony Michel. I know you guys hate the pick. I know, but he helped. He was a big part of what they did in the playoffs.
But, Chris, look, as it pertains to the receiving core, though.
Terrible.
Okay, so, and this is my point. When you say the draft.
Yeah.
What's their history in the draft?
It's awful. It's awful.
And so why should I think that they're going to have a good receiving core next year unless they make a trade?
Well, I mean, right now, you shouldn't. However, there's still time for them to sort of figure it out. And you reference what a trade would be. So I'm not going to condemn them at this point. But it is alarming to me that they've whiffed on some of these guys like Humphreys and Cole Beasley and Golden Tate. And I think, again, it's interesting to me that after the fact, and look, some of it's been from the players, so I'm not discrediting any of the offers from the Patriots, but I think we all know historically how they feel about that position. And it's one they tend to lowball. And whether that's a reputation thing that's trailing them or whether some of these offers, if we found out how they were really constructed, you know, split signing bonuses, roster bonuses, per game roster bonuses, would not quite be the same thing. Because remember, now all of a sudden that they're missing on these guys, it's like, oh, they had all these competitive offers. And look, the players have backed that up. Beasley and Humphreys have backed that up. But at the same time, before free agency started, how much of the, well, they can't pay anybody more than Julian Edelman, did you hear? So which is it? I mean, it's not a position that they have traditionally valued. And I've said before, the market has moved up and moved on without them. And I don't care how many championships you've won or who you are, in a league of 32 teams, you can't set the market by yourself. The market is the market. So if you're not willing to pay for these guys or structure the or pay and structure the contracts the way everybody else is, then you're going to be at a little bit of a competitive disadvantage trying to bring guys in who are proven wide receivers.
Do you think they're putting too much on Brady or, you know, leaving him out to dry, you know, something along those lines?
Could be. I mean, if it's the same receiving core, same level of talent as it was last year, you know, assuming that Josh Gordon's not someone they're counting on, I think that they're thinking they'll get him back at some point. But again, can you really count on that guy?
No.
I mean, you root for the guy, but you can't rely on the guy.
Correct.
That's
good
what
way
I
to
say.
Put it.
Yeah, you root for him. You definitely do. But it's not good business to rely on him. And nobody is more unsentimental than the Patriots, so they know that. So if it's the same thing, if it's Edelman and Dorsett and guys of that ilk, then, yeah, I would say they are asking too much of Brady, and they better make sure they can run the ball the way they did last year.
Okay, better. I would say better. I would say you want to strive for more than 13 points in the biggest game of the year. Here's the next point, but I'll let Fred and Norwood make it. Go ahead, Fred.
Guys, I'm just wondering, is Bill kind of taking – I mean, his hubris has gotten the way at times, and at least we know he's very confident in himself. I get the feeling that there's something like, you know, he'd love to bring someone in, but it's going to be at his price. And if he can't, then, oh, well, he'll figure it out. And I think maybe he likes getting fluffed after the Super Bowl about how great his defense was. So maybe he's okay with it. Oh, look, I can win without Brady. We're using defense in the running game.
So there it is. Bill wants to show he can win without Brady. That's not about the quarterback.
I mean, maybe that's true, but I don't think that has anything to do with the way the offseason's gone to this point. You know, I think they made an effort for guys, and they didn't get some guys that would have been really good fits. And now they're in a position where they have to figure out, is it going to be Jordy Nelson or Jermaine Kearse or Randall Cobb or Pierre Garçon? Is it going to be a trade? You know, do they look at somebody like Nelson Aguilar, Mohamed Sanu? You know, now I can tell you on Sanu, you know, my understanding is that, you know, he's not available per se, you know. So, I mean, that guy would be a great fit for them, and the contract certainly fits. It's like 13.25 the next 2 years
and
combined.
Where'd he go to school?
Rutgers.
Of course.
He would be ideal, but are the Falcons going to give him up? Why would the Falcons be inclined to give him up?
What about this notion? Bedard, we had on the phone yesterday, Greg Bedard, and he said that the Patriots have right now what he called a cap crunch, that they don't have the financial flexibility they've had in other years, and it's part of the reason they're approaching it the way they are. True or false?
I would say false, only because Bill himself has said we all know cap space can be maneuvered in a variety of
ways.
Okay,
forget the cap part of it. He said financial flexibility is the way to say it. I used Greg's term. He used cap crunch. But even real money, do they have budgetary issues that are preventing them from doing things the way they would like to do them?
Is that what Greg said?
Basically.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not putting words in his mouth. That's basically what he said.
I'm not aware of that they would have budgetary issues. Well, I mean, obviously there's a real money outlay versus, you know, what's on the cap. And there are some high base salaries and stuff this year. There's some salaries that become guaranteed, like Marcus Cannon, I think has $2.15 million of his base that became guaranteed today. Hightower, the fifth day of the new league year.
Fifth. So watch out for that one. I didn't know that.
Fifth.
Chris, yes, of course they have cap flexibility. Every team does if they start moving money around. How come they're not moving any money around? I mean, you just mentioned all those guys. Yeah. You look at McCourty, Hightower, Gronkowski, Stephon Gilmore, he's up there. Brady's an obvious one, but maybe...
Brady's the most obvious one.
Okay, but they can't do it till August because you have to wait a year, apparently. But even still...
I've heard different things on that.
Okay, so... You know,
I thought that too, but then I've heard that's not the case, so I don't know.
So then why haven't they done it?
I don't know.
So, and so this is... Is there a story behind the story there that these veterans aren't playing ball with them like they would normally?
Well, I do think there's an element of some of those guys, McCourty, Hightower. Like, McCourty's in the last year of his deal. His cap hit's over $13 million. It's 13.4. You would think that would be a restructure, but I'm not sure he's inclined to take that. Hightower's agent has come out and said he's not going to restructure. And
Gronk.
His is up by 11. Gronk is not, you know, really telling them anything at this point. So there's some guys where they're in a sort of a tough spot with these high cap hits. You know what's unusual is it's unusual for guys to get to the last year of the deal like this.
Yes, because you were saying that yesterday.
These contracts are structured so that when you get to the last year, you either redo the deal, extend the deal, or you get rid of the guy. They're not really designed for the guy to play out the last year, because that's why all these deals are padded on the back, you know, so that when you get to the end, there's some sort of motivation for both sides to do something.
So all of a sudden, why are they in the final year of these deals?
I don't know.
Because the players aren't playing ball, presumably.
Because they haven't been able to draft well enough at some of these positions to replace them.
Well, there's also that, Chris, and I've been talking about this too. They won the damn Super Bowl last year, and all these guys were huge factors.
Yeah,
you know, even Dante Hightower, who it feels
like
is invisible for portions of the regular season, is just a badass in these playoffs.
He's a money player,
right?
Yeah.
So when the money's on the table, here comes Hightower, and it's like, I think if if the season ended the way we all thought it was going to, the way it looked after that Pittsburgh game, where they sort of peter to the end and it sort of feels like, okay, this little run is over, I think it would have been easy for them to walk away from a lot of these players and say, okay, good run, it's over, love you, mean it, but we're going to turn the page. But when you win and they play well, it's like, well, so now what, we're going to cut all these big defensive players that helped us win this game? I think that's the spot that they're in.
Yeah, they're in some, I mean, they don't have as much flexibility as they've had in the past. However, I mean, the easy thing, it would seem, would be to do something with Brady, right?
Yeah.
So, 27, I mean, that's what's really killing them. I mean, a $27 million cap hit, and they could have done something last year instead of just adding those incentives in. See, this is the thing, if you kind of want to play it like, prove it to me year to year, I don't know if you can make it to 45, then you end up in this situation.
You can go Brady, but here's where we went. And I'm just reading you cap numbers.
Go ahead.
Daron Harmon, 4.75.
Lauren, that's not much for him.
He's not that good.
Oh, God, yes. Well, just hold on. So just let me finish.
Okay, I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
Okay, Daron Harmon, 4.75. Lawrence Guy, 4.3. Jason McCourty, 4.25. Jonathan Jones, 3. Brian Hoyer, 3. Rex Burkhead, 3. Matthew Slater, 2.9. David Andrews is worth his 2.8. Nate Ebner, 2.787. Call it 2.8. Nate Ebner, 2.8. Alandon Roberts, 2. Josh Gordon, 2 on your books. Devlin, 1.6. He's worth it, I guess. Brandon King, 1.4, et cetera, et cetera. Nate Ebner at 2.8. How many Nate Ebners on this team do they have at too much of a number? If you add up all those guys, you don't even have to add up all those guys. Add up half of those guys.
What was Harmon again? And 4-something?
Yes, and there's Trey Flowers. So are there too many, this vaunted middle class?
Well, that's the way they build it. I mean, some of those guys are important players and part of their middle class.
I'm sorry, which ones are those?
Daron Harmon's an important player.
Yeah, no.
Don't you think so?
Yeah,
David Andrews?
Yeah, no. Daron Harmon, $2.3 million per snap in the AFC Championship game.
David Andrews, I told you, is worth his 2.8. I took him off the list. How many did he get, Maz?
2 snaps in the AFC title game. Two.
Didn't you guys say Chung? You don't think Chung's an important player for them?
I didn't put him on my list. But he's 3-5. I think that's debatable.
Boy, they have a ton of money tied up at safety, don't they?
You can't
find. That's a lot of money.
I mean, he's a horrible coverage player. So he's sort of a undersized linebacker the way he plays a lot.
Horrible coverage.
Oh, he's a liability in coverage.
I wouldn't say that. He's good against tight ends and backs.
For 3-5. I don't know. You got to pay him 3-5?
Pay Daron Harmon $4.5 million so he can sit in the AFC title game. That is awesome. No, that is great.
So
I love that.
I mean, I think there's a debate there that middle class is bloated. Is bloated and overrated.
Hey, you won't get a debate from me on Ebner and the special teams stuff. You know, I think that they sort of sell out for that, and I'm not sure they always get bang for the buck. And I feel like other teams have guys that play on special teams that, in a pinch, you could actually put into a game at a defensive position or an offensive position. I think they sort of have too many, this guy only plays special teams guys. But, I mean, the reality is it's what you talked about before. It's Gronk at $11 million. It's like, don't lose the forest amongst the trees. It is the big cap hits.
I don't necessarily agree.
You're penny pinching with these little guys. I mean, those cap hits, there's a lot of teams that would love to have cap hits like that.
A lot of teams that would die to pay Daron Harmon $5 million a year?
Have you seen what the money is in free agency? What guys get? When Harmon signed that deal, that was a below market deal at the time.
Chris.
It's still a below market deal.
He's just
for him.
A guy. Would you come on with Daron Harmon?
Okay, but I'm not telling you he's a Pro Bowler. What I'm telling you is if you pay any attention to free agency and put your agenda to the side for a second.
No, he'd get paid.
These guys get overpaid.
So fine,
Mike.
Let someone else.
That's the whole league of guys getting overpaid.
So since when are the Patriots the ones overpaying them? They always let everyone else
overpay
these guys.
That's where you're wrong. When he signed that deal, it wasn't an overpay. Everybody agreed it was an underpay.
I'm not talking about when he signed.
More in the open market.
Right now, he's on the books for almost $5 million. You think he has that kind of value to the team? He's not.
In today's NFL, yeah.
Okay, so
they're all overpaid. That's the point.
Chris, give me a break.
Now you sound like them. This is why they don't have a receiver. This thinking.
Who's them?
Oh, you know, I'm putting this. This is the value I have on this player. I don't care what the rest of the market is. I'm just going to ignore the other 31 teams and set my own price.
He's just a
guy. I don't like Daron Harmon. You're a Jag, so therefore I'm paying you $2.5 million a year. You'd have nobody on your team if you operated that way.
Chris.
The market's the market.
Chris. Okay, then the market.
Capitalism, baby.
Okay, baby. Then Rob Gronkowski's underpaid. If the market's the market, then he's underpaid. He's
Edelman
overpaid.
Too.
And Tom Brady's still underpaid.
And Edelman, too.
You won't get an argument.
Well, no. You just said top of the roster. The top of the roster guys are not overpaid. Brady at 27, Breeze is over 30. So Brady at 27.
Cap hit versus money is different, though. And you know, you can have a guy making, like, he's not making that much money, but his cap hit is high.
He's sure not.
So that's just not good cap management, wouldn't you agree?
Is McCourty overpaid? Can I get you to admit that? Or do you have, is this like a defensive back thing?
So you're agreeing that they have a cap crunch?
I'm so confused by you guys.
No, because you keep saying
cap, Maz, and then asking me about real money. So I don't know how to treat that.
Well, it's both.
You're asking me about a cap, which is completely different from real money.
Devin McCourty.
Which is it? Because I don't know which one you're asking me about.
Devin McCourty, $9 million base. Is that the right number for him? Real money. Is that the right number for
him? When there's safeties out there getting $13, $14 million? Yes.
Yes. Devin McCourty's worth $9 million in base salary.
Yes, he is.
You don't believe
in this market.
That.
Yes, I do.
In this market. He's not a free agent. Is he worth $9 million to this team?
Chris, they don't have the financial flexibility they've had in the past.
Come on.
They
please.
Don't.
Please.
This is why I used the term financial flexibility earlier.
Okay.
Pull the cap stuff out.
Okay.
They don't have the financial flexibility they've had in the past. And the McCourty thing to me is it's the fifth year of the deal. It's the final year.
Oh, I'm not.
When does that happen with them?
If I'm the team, I definitely try and get him to renegotiate. That's the way the NFL works. But if you're asking me my opinion, do I think he deserves that money? Yes. But there's a lot of guys who deserve money that don't get the money. So, like, I don't fault them for coming to him and saying, we want you to renegotiate. Just like I don't fault him for saying, no, I'm good.
The fault line, what we're talking about here is the problem at the top of the roster or the middle? That's what we're talking about.
I just disagree that it's at the middle. I think it's more at the top.
And
like I said to you guys before, it's unusual to get guys in the last year of the deal, because from a cap standpoint, you're going to get these bloated cap numbers, right? Everybody knows that. And so you're supposed to make these decisions prior to that. And when you don't, you get these bloated cap numbers, and that throws it all
off. Okay, we have a bloated clock now. We're late. Here's Murray's update quick, and we're right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
All right, let's take some calls for Gasper. I want his thoughts on the Celtics as well coming up here in a second, but we do have a little bit of a backlog. Adam and Lowell on the receiver situation. Go, Adam.
Hey, guys. Felger, I can answer that question for you. Patrick Chung sucks. Every touchdown to a tight end this year, he was about 5 yards behind the tight end. On top of that, could Belichick stay on vacation till after the draft? Because I honestly think if his life depended on it, he could not draft a wide receiver. Also, good to see Greg Schiano fail upwards again. Thanks a lot, Bill. Good motto on earning your spot and earning your keep. Thanks, guys.
Good job.
Well, you know why Schiano's there?
Because he let his kid walk on at Rutgers in long snap.
Well, basically because he's sort of like, you know, a placeholder until his kid takes over.
Then that too. Absolutely.
Until Steven takes over.
Steve was Schiano's guy in college. Yeah. Now he's going to groom him. It's... I honestly,
this is just my opinion. I think it's going to be closer to co-defensive coordinators.
Brian and Steve?
No, Steven and Greg Schiano.
Oh, so you think Steven's going to be a prominent role this year?
I do.
So, again, I don't think it's going to matter win-loss record, but in terms of liking it, it kind of makes me sick that the defensive staff has become his kids and Bobo's. Where's Bielema? Where's that tool bag?
Oh, Bielema?
Yeah, whatever.
See, defensive line?
I don't know. He's sort of another sink.
He's
fan.
Still hovering.
Bobo,
around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another sink.
He's still
fan.
There. There were reports that he was telling people he was going to be the defensive coordinator.
The staff has become sink offense and his kids. But the receiver. The receiver situation.
Yeah.
So what's it like in the draft? Is it deep?
I wouldn't say it's deep. There are some guys though that sort of fit like what they're looking for that maybe you could get in the later rounds, like a Hunter Renfrow from Clemson. You know, maybe mid round type guy. David Sills from West Virginia. There's a kid, Cody Thompson from Toledo. And then Debo Samuel, who will probably go in the first two rounds from South Carolina, is a guy that could fit, you know, what they want to do. The thing is, we all know it. I mean, they have not drafted well or projected well at that position. You look at Deion Branch and Givens, obviously your guys, those were excellent picks. But then go beyond that.
There hasn't been a single one since.
Yeah, I mean, Edelman didn't play a snap at wide receiver in college, and that's the best evaluation they've had. Even Malcolm Mitchell. Like, Malcolm Mitchell was a fourth-round pick. Everybody knew he could play. That guy was a first-round talent. It was just about the knees.
And so Edelman never even played a snap?
No, he was a college quarterback.
Oh, I thought he did a bunch of things. He didn't even do that. Wow, that's unbelievable. Did he work out as a receiver in the?
He did. He did. He did agree to work out as. And some of these guys, you'll ask them and they won't do it. Like who was it? Trace McSorley for Penn State. They asked him this year to work out with the receivers. He was like, "No, I'm good."
Okay, but either way, the Edelman's it, and it was a flyer, seventh round.
But they did. But they did a better job not having seen the guy play receiver than all the guys they've seen all the film on.
Such a great
and like
point.
Done a workout for. So it's almost better if the guy's never played the position. Wow. They have a better chance of hitting on it.
Joe and Quincy, what do you got for us?
Yeah, no. Let's go back and talk about the defensive staff. So help me push your take through take development real quick. So Brian Flores leaves, and everybody says, "Okay, yeah, it was all Bill anyway. Don't worry about it." Patriots just roll off arguably their best defensive performance in the playoffs ever. Oh, nothing to see here. So if it's all Bill, where was Bill last year when Nick friggin' Foles throws up 40-plus in the Super Bowl? Where was the genius then? Where was the defense then? How come Brian Flores gets no credit for this defense?
Okay, Joe, I'm just going to cut you off. It's a great point. How much of that last year was Flores?
I think a good chunk of it was. They just were more aggressive overall, and I thought they did a good job of really sort of scheming up and what their weaknesses were. You know, guys who could win one-on-one, they didn't have a lot of that, but they did a really good job taking advantage of their secondary, which was a strength of the team because they were very good in coverage. They did a good job taking advantage of that and also scheming it up and confusing offensive lines up front to get pressure.
So maybe Bill can take a page from Flores. I mean, because I said this earlier, that as long as Bill's here, they're fine. And the fact that it's sycophants and kids on the staff, it's not going to matter because it's still Bill at the end of the day. But then again, Bill was there at the end of the day against the Eagles, and where was he? That's a good point by Joe.
He was guarding Malcolm Butler on the sideline to make sure he didn't run on the field.
Well, so that's the answer, actually, now that I think of it.
Mark in Connecticut, go.
Hey, guys, how's it going? I'm wanting to talk about Jordy Nelson.
So let me just stop you because... We got it. How do you feel about Jordy Nelson?
I was going to ask you, because from the Green Bay standpoint, if it were Cobb or Nelson, and the Patriots can only have one, which guy do you think is better?
Cobb. But Nelson, I thought, was cashed his last year in Green Bay. Cashed. But he put up numbers in Oakland that I didn't pay attention to it. So, I don't know. I didn't really watch him much. I thought he was toast in the last year in Green Bay. And Cobb's not the same guy. But Cobb is tough and smart and good hands. He'll go over the middle. He can... You know, he'll fair catch a punt for you. You can line him up at running back. He's like, has a lot of qualities that they would really like.
I'd bring them both in and hope one of them sticks. Because I think your chances on either one individually aren't good. But maybe you get lucky if you bring them both in, and who knows, maybe they can play.
Right. I think Jordy Nelson can still play.
This is what it has become. You just go find me some bum with one leg on the street and see if he can catch the ball.
They've already got one guy with one hamstring. So let's see if we can find one guy with just one ACL. Rocco and Saugus. Go ahead, Rocco.
Hey, guys, listen, Mike, I called earlier this week. I want the talent. You were laughing at me with your sarcastic tone of voice. Oh, you can't question the Patriots. Honestly, Mike, I feel like going down there and putting another ball gag in your mouth. The way you are, man. But I'm just afraid that you're going to like it so much. You got like the Oscar De La Hoya kinkiness to you. If that's the way you go, buddy, listen, I got a friend, a childhood friend named Dominic. He goes both ways now. He'll take care of you if that's what you like, Mike.
Yeah, honestly, give him my number, Rocco. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You got it, bro.
That was his whole call? That was still worth it.
Okay.
I like Rocco.
Interesting. He's got a thing for you, though, man.
Yeah, he does.
We wanted to meet me at the batting cages in Saugus.
Right.
Fight me a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, but he apologized for that.
Connor in Chicago has been holding patiently for Gasper. I'm waiting for this, Connor. Thank you. Go ahead, Connor.
Yeah, I was originally calling to say as many, you know, takes have you gotten terribly wrong on the past. The one you nailed was with Claude Julien and the Bruins and how getting rid of him wasn't going to make an impact. And I was going to ask Gasper, you know, if he was ever going to finally admit that he was wrong on that. But given that we're talking about...
No,
this is why you're on the air, is to ask this question.
Let's stick with that. Were you willing to admit you were wrong on Claude Julien?
What was the question again?
Oh, my God.
No, but I mean, in what context again?
It doesn't matter what the context is. Did you overrate Claude Julien and his importance to the team?
I did. Correct. So I was wrong. I was wrong. I overrated Claude and his importance to the team.
We got the W word.
Yes.
That's all we're looking for.
He wanted to give up a fight initially.
He did.
I was just wondering what the context, but when you said overrated, I did. I overrated him. That's fair. That's fair. He was a good coach, but I overrated him.
A lot of people did. Connor, what else do you got? You held for so long. Go ahead.
Yeah, and on the path, I feel like one thing that we're really overlooking is with Belichick being, you know, on vacation, you know, at the draft or at the combine, he didn't speak. One of only two teams not to speak.
They were the only team that didn't speak. I was there. They were the only team that didn't speak. Sean Payton did something to the side with his beat writers, and the Redskins did something with their beat writers. There was only one team that did nothing, the New England Patriots.
I'm just surprised that the narrative is not more that, like, this is now Josh Daniels' team to build out, and Bill's taking a backseat in personnel.
Oh, I don't think it's it at all.
Yeah, I don't think so either. By the way, can I just say something? Like, you saying how many takes you got terribly wrong on the Patriots?
Oh, my God. Wait, no, this isn't tip for tech. Can you just take one loss and then we'll go to break?
I'm going
to
praise you. I think that people confuse a lot of times, like, just because they win, like, because Bill goes out there and figures it out and maximizes his personnel and hides personnel holes, that doesn't mean that the criticism of a particular move was unwarranted or wrong.
I've been saying this all day.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. And I think it happens again, like, all the time. Like, like, people will throw all this criticism of an offseason back in our faces if they make the AFC title game or whatever. The reality is, like, I think people get confused between giving him credit for the brilliance as a coach,
right,
and then credit for what happens as a player personnel guy.
No. You won, so congratulations, but the pick still sucked. I mean, that's the point.
You can say that. That's fair to say.
Exactly.
I think it's cute that you two are getting along.
No, that was good. I'm glad we gave him an extra 30 seconds.
You guys go for a walk.
I want Gasper's thought.
Practice a dunk it up the street, pick me up.
Gasper's thought on the Celtics next in our long commercial-free segment.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
New York is the mecca of basketball, right? And we hear from people all the time, right? From players, from, you know, representatives. It's about who wants to come.
Mm-hmm.
We can't respond because of the NBA rules, etc. But that doesn't stop them from telling us,
right?
And I can tell you from what we've heard, I think we're going to have a very successful offseason when it comes to free agents.
Okay, James Dolan, that weasel, talking and implying basically he's heard from NBA superstars that they're coming to New York, which we sort of imply. Durant, Kyrie Irving, what's he talking about? Chris Gasper on that and the Celtics in general. Chris, your take has been, the last time I spoke to you on this, you said you think it's more likely that the Celtics have neither Anthony Davis or Kyrie Irving than it is that they have those players next year. Do you still feel that way?
Yes, I do.
So is the status quo in your opinion, or has anything changed with the team playing better? Kyrie sort of turning the page a little bit with his attitude, improving his attitude. Has anything changed in your thinking there?
Not really. I think it's status quo, and I still think, again, it's going to be lasting feeling Kyrie Irving has about this season. And a lot of that's going to be the playoffs. You know, if they get eliminated in the second round in six games, is it frustration that they underachieved, that nobody listened to him, that the coach didn't listen to him, that the players didn't listen to him? He's won a championship. He's walked this path. Guys didn't follow. If they get to the NBA Finals and they're real close, is the lasting feeling, okay, these guys finally listened to me. Like, we're really close. You know, I can win here. I don't know about the ownership, you know, in New York or wherever. Let me think about this. You know, I this is the best place for me. And I think, here's what I think. Honestly, I think...
You don't think it's a foregone conclusion?
No, okay. I don't. But I honestly think you could ask Kyrie Irving today what he's going to do. Give him truth serum and ask him today what he's going to do. And I think July 1st, he could feel totally different and do something. Like, I don't even think he knows at this point, for sure. I think he could tell you, like, 100%, you know, I think this is what I'm going to do, or this is what I'm going to do. And then come July 1st, he'd look back and be like, yeah, I felt that way at this time, but now I'm kind of thinking differently.
Well, so I'm coming around to that. I took his word in October, but now...
I told you that was a mistake from the jump.
Oh, my God, what a moody fella. And it sort of sucks. We, the team, more the team, are really just at the mercy of his moods. So we'll see if he stays Mr. Happy. Your thought on the state of the team right now and how they're playing and what it means?
I think they're starting to find some consistency, which is good. It was really important for them to win that game coming off the road trip, especially because, look, they gave up the 140 points to the Clippers, which was embarrassing. But then they followed that up the first quarter against the Kings. They allowed 38 points. It was their highest scoring first quarter of the season in terms of points allowed. So they could have put themselves in a really bad spot. They sort of dug deep there, and they won it. And Kyrie was a big part of that. You know, he closed in that fourth quarter. You look at that game, it was a one-point game with like 6:20 to go, and they open up a 10-point lead, and he's accounting for, you know, a good chunk of the points. 7 of the 9 points were Kyrie, and 19 of the final 22 he either scored or assisted on. They need him, and that's what you're going to need in the playoffs. So the fact that he seems to be engaged and that he's feeling good about the team, and you got Jaylen Brown going, I think you're starting to see what this team can be, but you never know. It feels like they're maybe like one, you know, loss to the Indiana Pacers away from all barking at each other and snapping at each other again.
Okay, one final basketball thing, then we're going to do the update, and we'll come back. We'll get one more segment with your calls. Chris owes us a segment. You want to weigh in on the Russell Westbrook situation, what happened out in Utah?
Yeah, I just think you brought up Dolan there. It's really interesting to me. I mean, I think there's a clear double standard in the league, and it's better now in terms of what's been done by the Jazz ownership. But just, you know, Westbrook, they allow these players to be the target of all kinds of invective and terrible things. And then when they clap back, it's like, here's this fine. And again, I don't agree with what Westbrook said, but here's this fine. Then Dolan, somebody basically says, hey, you, sir, are a bad owner. I think you should sell the team. And the guy gets to ban the guy from, I mean, give me a break. Like, that's ridiculous. I mean, Adam Silver's a good commissioner, but I think you got to step in. And trust me, the players are aware of that sort of double standard, how thin-skinned somebody like James Dolan is. But meanwhile, you know, they're telling, they have some guy in the stands, you know, telling them,
okay,
you know,
the
do this, do that, whatever.
Okay, but the double standard didn't really exist. I mean, Carol, I can't forget her name, Miller.
Gail Miller,
excuse me. It took a day, and they banned the fan, so there wasn't really a double standard there.
No, the Jazz did something, but I'm talking about in the NBA. The NBA. Like, the NBA should have been able to sort of overrule Dolan or say, like, okay, you're banning this guy, but he didn't really do anything, so we're going to fine you $100,000, you know, basically for your reaction to this. So it's like the players, you know, this has become a thing now because of what happened to Westbrook, but they have to endure all this abuse. And literally, some guy says to Dolan, who's probably one of the worst owners in sports, when are you going to sell the team? And he gets to ban that guy from the arena? Uh-uh. No,
I mean, that thing with
wrong.
Dolan, really, that's one of the worst things ever.
It's embarrassing.
I mean, it is embarrassing. That's a loser move.
It was a good suggestion, too.
It was.
Because he's an idiot.
He is a complete boob.
Okay, so a couple open lines. You want to grab them? 617-779-0985. No commercials. Update. We come back with your calls on everything here on an Agenda-Free Friday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.